Welcome to One Health Wednesdays. This podcast aims to promote the principles of One Health and encourage professional development. Here's your host, Ginger Dixon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Health Wednesdays, a collaboration between LabOut Global and One Life Epi Solutions. I'm Ginger Dixon, and I'd like to introduce our guest today, Rulayo Emmanuel. Rulayo, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you are a medical parasitologist, and we'd love to hear more about your background, how you got to this point in your career, and your interest in One Health.
I started as a microbiologist. My first degree was microbiology. Then I went on to do parasitology at the PhD level, medical parasitology at the PhD level. I have been working with Nigerian Institute for Trypanosomiasis and Onchocerciasis Research, Kaduna, Nigeria. And I've been worked for about 13 plus years now. I've picked interest in most of these neglected tropical diseases because when we go to the field, we don't only see trypanosomiasis there, we see some other NTDs. And looking at NTD's epidemiological pattern, it has a lot to do with One Health. So in 2016, when I first heard about One Health, you know, it wasn't really clear what it's all about until I sat to read. And I found that my research interest, which is African trypanosomiasis, is at the core of One Health. And that's made me generate a huge passion for One Health. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you made a good point that the way that, you know, the trypanosomiasis and other, you know, neglected tropical disease patterns, it's very much One Health because there's that the host component and then the human disease component. And so that's excellent. That's what brought you into One Health. So in your research, what are some challenges that you've seen in, you know, working with this disease and other diseases, or, you know, tracking down and working in disease prevention?
Yeah. What are the major challenges we have is the road to any neglected tropical disease sites is not an easy one. It's not an easy one. It takes a lot of patience, a lot of perseverance, a lot of diligence to navigate those terrains. One, I'll talk about the physical road network to these research sites. They are not like the road networks we have in the cities. So studies in such area has to be seasonal. Especially, you know, when you have the rains off, that's during the dry season, it's best for such studies. And then secondly, I would like to say that some of those places are not safe. Some of those places are not safe for us to go to, especially with the situation in Nigeria, looking at insurgencies and then the insecurity we have currently in Nigeria, the political situations, paucity of funds to execute these research activities has not been encouraging at all. But with perseverance, like I said, and then diligence, we have been able to find a way out to do some field activities.
I can imagine the challenges and jeopardizing your safety to go into these areas and research these diseases. That's very honorable. And so tell us more about, for trypanosomiasis, is there a, you know, kind of a seasonal component to that, or a part that's related to climate? Like, do you see more of the parasite in certain seasons, or more cases in certain seasons?
Yeah. Trypanosomiasis has a seasonal pattern because when you look, it has a lot to do with the environment, because we have the vector in the environment, the vector which attracts us of flies. We have them living in the environment, and then they are affected by environmental conditions. The humidity, the temperature, moisture level, you know, even the nature, the vegetation affects the dispersal and distribution of sassafly per time. For example, during the rainy seasons, we have many of the sassaflies going into the canopies, hiding away from rains because they don't want their wings to be, you know, to be frayed. Then during the dry season, we have majority of the sassaflies concentrated around the riverine areas. You know, they come, now there is no tree canopies again during the dry season. They come and concentrate around ponds, around rivers, around the lakes, because they know humans in those communities will surely come to these rivers to fetch water for domestic activities, to, you know, to wash their clothing, to have their bath. And they also know that there is no water source elsewhere for livestock rearers to use. So they will actually come to the river to water their animals. So the sassafly lay wait around riverine areas, waiting for those people to come down during the dry season. So when you look at the prevalence of animal trypanosomiasis during the rainy season and the dry season, there is always a difference because of where they are, how far they travel. Then when you look at the prevalence of human African trypanosomiasis per season in some areas, you realize that possibly during the dry season, you might have more people coming in contact with sassafly in their habitats, because humans, we have to live with their domestic environment and encroach into the sassafly-infested forest to go and source for water when the rain is gone. But when rain is still falling during the rainy season, they can actually collect rain for domestic use in their environment. So like I said, sassafly is affected by environmental condition, and this condition changes with season. So there is a seasonal pattern for the diseases.
That's really interesting. And
that's both human African trypanosomiasis and animal African trypanosomiasis. There are seasonal patterns for the two diseases.
Yeah, which is interesting. It's interesting to know or think about how that changes, you know, depending on the season. And I'm sure that affects, you know, the prevention measures that you might suggest, or even tracking, you know, trying to do surveillance with these diseases.
Yeah, it affects the prevention method. Like during the rainy seasons, it might be very difficult to control sassaflies because you have them in the thickets. You have them in the, especially the riverine species, you have them in areas that are quite unreachable. Because when we talk about the rainforest, the forest are quite thick and not easily accessible by humans. Some of the soils are quite slurry that you can't even walk easily on them to mount any control gadget you want to put in place. And some of the areas are quite inaccessible that you can't really travel down there or navigate with a vehicle to execute control activities. So the seasonal pattern affects the control activities as well. But during the dry seasons, it's always very easy to work with sassafly. Meanwhile, you don't have many of them around during dry seasons. You have them more during the rainy seasons.
So we talk about, you know, changes in the climate and how those can affect both diseases and host species. Is that something that you've seen during your experience? Have you seen changes in, you know, patterns or changes in the seasonal climates that have affected these diseases?
Yeah. Yeah, I observed that last year, February. because actually there's been no reports of human African trypanosomiasis in Nigeria over some period of time now. Not because the disease is not there, but because there is little, you know, comprehensive field activities ongoing concerning human African trypanosomiasis. And because of the limitations that we experience from the manufacturers of rapid diagnostic techniques and then, you know, field-friendly methods for diagnosing human African trypanosomiasis, I won't really be able to talk much about the pattern of human African trypanosomiasis. But for for animal African trypanosomiasis, there's a lot of changes in the pattern of the prevalence. Like, for example, in Southwest Nigeria, some of the thick forests, some of the rainforests are being transitioned into what are we call derived grassland, because there is a lot of activities going on in the forest. People are clearing the bushes to have a farmland. They are clearing the bushes for timber production, and some are clearing the bushes just to control stesoflies, because they realize when the bushes are gone, the number of stesoflies that comes to bother them in their communities also reduces. So these activities, you know, by the time the trees are gone, the temperatures are higher, the, you know, humidity are higher, and all these affect trypanos, affect stesoflies. So the stesoflies keeps shrinking along with the receding forest. As the forest goes backward, the stesofly keeps moving with it out of human inhabited areas and out of areas where livestock is being watered or where they are being taken for grazing. So this changes the pattern of occurrences of animal African trypanosomiasis, because the encounter with stesoflies is dropping as the forest is being cleared. That is what I observed in the field, and that is the area of climate change I observed. And also with the changes in rain patterns and, you know, and some other environmental conditions, stesoflies also move along with this. They move with changes in patterns. And this movement affects prevalence of the infection they cause, which is African trypanosomiasis. But on the other side of it is some vegetations in some areas are experiencing positive, you know, changes. Because when stesofly leaves an environment, they must surely get their blood meal. So they move into new areas. They invade new environments, areas where stesofly has not been before. People begin to complain of stesoflies coming around there. And at times when the forest is being cleared, you find out that the stesofly comes into peri-domestic environment to enjoy the few trees that are there and live among humans to cause havoc. So it's a two-way thing. They leave the forest to come into peri-domestic environment, or they leave cleared environment and then move deeper into the forest.
And what you described is a great example of, you know, that One Health global systems thinking that, you know, that we would like to try to promote, that, you know, that it's kind of a double-edged sword. People are coming in trying to, you know, clear the bush to make their living and to, you know, get rid of the stesoflies, and then they're just moving into another area and creating a new problem. And that's definitely challenging.
Yeah, that's challenging.
Well, it sounds like you know, there's definitely some challenges there, and a lot of epidemiological surveillance that y'all are doing, you know, looking at prevalence and changing from one area to the next. And what are some challenges with, you know, with tracking or maybe education that you've seen in your work? Or do you feel like people have been receptive to you know, to education on what's going on with the cystic flies and these diseases, or do you feel like more work is needed there?
Yeah, there is still so much work to be done because there are communities I have been to that they really don't know the danger of having cystic flies with them in their peridomestic environment. And when we look at the lifestyle of those people, they are always in contact with cystic fly per day. Because when they go to the farm, many of them are peasant farmers. When they go to the farm, they encounter cystic flies. Many of them will tell you, oh, I've been bitten this morning. Oh, we are used to it. They are just like mosquitoes around. So they encounter cystic flies in the farmland. They encounter cystic flies in the playground, because from some schools, I caught cystic flies from the playground of some, rural villages schools, from churches, from mosques, we got cystic flies from these areas. Even from their verandas, we got cystic flies from there, from the river where they fetch water for drinking, they had cystic flies. The vegetable farmland they have in the community, we found cystic flies there. So they live on daily basis, you know, and encounter cystic flies from all angles of their environment. Then when we look at the men, many of them are fishermen. They go into the forest, go by the rivers, they encounter cystic flies. A whole lot of them are game hunters. They go into the forest to hunt for game, and they encounter cystic flies there. So they really don't know the danger of the bites from this disease vector. They just felt, okay, it's just like mosquito, it causes fever. So a lot of things needed to be, you know, explained to them. And I realized that it's a bit difficult to say this to them in English, because only about 30-40% of the young adults there are schooled. So I attempted, you know, contextualizing the basic knowledge of cystic fly and trypanosomiasis into indigenous languages so they could understand what this is all about and be able to teach each other. So what I did was to go to the schools, explain to the children in English, which they understood very well. And I believe those children will be able to go home and explain further to their parents. Before the parents, I have intentions to have pamphlets, to have, you know, little, you know, written materials in indigenous languages for them to be well educated. And I have also charts like posters with schematic diagrams showing, you know, the danger of being bitten by cystic fly, because that's the basic thing. They just want to know, okay, what is the problem if we have been bitten? And then they need to just know more about the disease.
Yeah. And that's an excellent strategy, you know, to go in and teach children, you know, and they can take that message home to their families, and they'll be aware, you know, as they grow older as well. And I've seen the schematic diagrams, you know, been really effective with helping to illustrate for people, you know, what's going on. So that's excellent work that you're doing. And with that, I'd like to see, you know, you've had quite a bit of experience working with trypanosomiasis and neglected tropical disease. Is there any advice that you have for students or people early in their careers wanting to get into wind health or parasitology?
Okay. My advice for those of us working currently is we shouldn't give up, because it's not very easy to leave the city and go into the rural areas to work. It's not very easy when you consider the type of water you drink, the food you eat there, and all those things. You wouldn't want to go. Then for those that are coming, there are still a lot of areas to explore, especially when it comes to diagnosis of African trypanosomiasis. We're still having a lot of problem with that, because most of the times, the molecular techniques cannot be done in the field. And when you look at the number of days we spend on the field, it's always not very easy to return samples. You just want to do a spot check, get the risk spots, and try to see what you can do before you leave the field. So for human African trypanosomiasis, we have a lot of problem when it comes to using the rapid diagnostic techniques. We still use the microscopy and some other insensitive techniques. So I want to encourage the upcoming student, the current student, to explore, you know, and do a lot of experimentation so that we can have, you know, novel diagnostic kits for human African trypanosomiasis and for animal African trypanosomiasis as well. And then looking at the, you know, the vaccine development, looking at drug, you know, readily available drug, alternative drugs, apart from fexinidazole that is being used recently. I want to plead with them to try to explore those areas of chemotherapy, diagnosis, and also affordable control techniques for the disease.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for highlighting those. I mean, that is a great point, that having things that you can
use. Having me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I am. And it's always nice to hear, you know, specifics like that of what challenges you've seen and, you know, what you hope to see in future work and future generations as we get, you know, new people and these young minds in. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you as well for joining us. And I'd like to give you a moment here to thank anyone that you'd like to that's helped you along the way.
Okay. I would like to appreciate my colleagues at work. They made it quite easy to grow in this path. You know, there are too many to mention. There are too many to mention, but I have so many of them that believe so much in me. I would also like to appreciate Dr. Peter Dede, the former coordinator of Pan-African Sessent Trypanosomiasis Eradication Campaign in Nigeria. He gave me the first landing to have my experience in the training with African Union, and he so much believed in me and has helped me grow. I also want to appreciate Dr. JJ Ajakaye. He has also helped him know vetting some of my proposals and seeing that my field activities are well planned. I also want to thank Dr. Igwe. Dr. Igwe was my former DG. He made vehicles, drivers available for me to always be in the field while he was my DG. And I want to thank my supervisors in schools. I have a supervisory team in school. They have also been quite helpful to see me grow in this path. And I also want to thank you too for having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for sharing with us today and speaking more to what you've seen and your experience in One Health. We wish you luck on your One Health adventure and stay safe out there.
Thank you very much.
To support the mission of One Health Wednesdays, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify and remember to leave a rating and review. You can find us on all social media channels and at onehealthwednesdays.com.